our guests from Pendleton, Condon, Coos Bay, the Dalles, La Grande, Ontario coming up, I understand, and Pendleton. Thank you all very much for...
Bend didn't get up.
Bend.
I thought I said bend. And bend. Thank you all very much for calling and videoing in. We can see you, but I understand that you may or may not be able to see us. And we certainly have some folks in the Capitol here also. We have several of the members that are not on and some that are on, but let me identify that Representative Burley and Representative Wisnett is here from the Bend area. Representative Dallum is here from Condon and the Dalles. Coos Bay is Senator Verger is here and Representative Roblin here. La Grande, Senator Nelson and Representative Smith, and Pendleton, same duo, Senator Nelson and Rep Smith, and then of course the rest of our committee, and from Pendleton also is Representative Jensen. Sorry, Representative Jensen. I think I give Smith credit for that. Anyways, we appreciate very much that you're taking this time, and we welcome your testimony. We have a few ground rules that I would like to go over, if you would, please. We are going to be rotating through, and I think we're going to start with Pendleton. What we would like to do is ask you to identify yourself for the record when you're speaking. We're allowing 2 minutes per person to speak, and if you would please adhere to that policy, I will notify you when you have 5 seconds remaining, and I ask you to summarize what your topic. If you would please, if you have written testimony, if you would refrain from reading it and just give us a summary of that, and then of course submit it along with your sign-up sheets. Senator Schrader and I will read it and make it available to the rest of the committee. So please follow that. We have a great deal of number of people that want to speak, and we're going to try and get through as many as possible, but we will be timing, and we will be running close to our 2-hour limit. So please keep that in mind as to that. I would also be remiss if I didn't say that the Senate President is here tonight, Senator Courtney. Thank you for organizing this. And to the Speaker of the House, Karen Minnis, for the same. They have both been very strong and instrumental in allowing us to travel around and certainly to have this conference. So we appreciate that from both parties. So with that, Pendleton, if you would like to begin, we appreciate you being first.
Hi, my name is Mark Royal. I'm with Umatilla Morrill County Community Corrections, live in Umatilla County, and I'm representing today the Oregon Association of Community Corrections Directors, speaking in reference to the funding levels for the community corrections portion of Department of Corrections allocation. I wanted to comment, I thank the Joint Ways and Means to allowing us this opportunity to speak. I'd like to talk a little about our partnership with the state and the counties and how successful that partnership has been since 1995. We also, though, realize that in a partnership that we both have to hold up both ends of the deal, and, of course, we're concerned about funding levels. There was a promise in 1995 that the state would honor those funding levels at the current service level, and we would hope that that would continue. Also, would like to talk real briefly about some of the funding rates, and that we know in the future we'll have to address those rates. They were established in 1995 and are now quite old. So the cost of delivering service has also gone up. One last thing I'd like to mention is that with the new focus, and of course Umatilla County has a huge methamphetamine problem as well as the rest of the state, we are fearful that a reduction in funding around this time where bills are being constructed to bring enforcement, that we won't have the means to treat offenders who come to community supervision. We know that that impacts that offender population and reduces recidivism, and with reduced funding, we will be unable to provide that type of service. I guess there is one more thing since I have 30 seconds. I'd like to talk briefly about if the amount of $190,334,327 is less than that amount, then of course that opens an opt-out for counties so that they then can make a choice to move that service back to the state. And then the very last thing I guess that I have is, I'm sorry, I've lost track of my notes.
Well, that's great. Thank you very much for your testimony.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Look at that. You just cut the center wrong.
Okay. You still on?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Want me to go? Oh, okay. Good evening. I'm Pat Timpinski, and I'm here this evening in Pendleton to represent Northeast Oregon Regional Allied Health Education Consortium. And as you probably know, Oregon State University has had a $32.8 million cut in proposed cut with the budget. Because of the dedication of funds, their only option is to cut state-funded programs. $1.8 million for AHEC throughout Oregon and the Office of Rural Health is the number two priority that Oregon State University listed for restoration of funds. And I'm here on behalf of that group. And so you might ask why would you want to fund or refund AHEC? From a career standpoint, AHEC partners with schools, youth, and health professionals. It fosters community awareness for local health careers. It creates a pipeline for local health care practitioners, targeting junior and senior high school students and teachers. It provides things like health career days, great innovators workshops, MedQuest, camp connections. It partners with workforce by coordinating with local workforce development boards, economic development, to provide data and information. It provides CEUs for health professionals. They provide education for student residents. What we're providing, or we're proposing, is providing an innovative approach to grow our own rural healthcare professionals. The record has been that they've been able to leverage 2 to 4 times the money allocated from the state. Please restore the funding for AHEC and the Office of Rural Healthcare at $1.8 million for Senate Bill 5522. And I would be remiss if I did not put a plug in. Vicki Reed, for counselor at Pendleton High School, asked me to comment that the elimination of Commission on Children and Family Funds, which provides the only resource for services to children who are at mild risk, teenagers, and it's a resource of last resort. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Next, please, and I want to remind you, we've got to stick pretty close to 2 minutes, please. And Ben, you're on deck. You'll be the next group up.
Hi, my name is William D. Morris. I'm here to represent Eastern Oregon Training Center. Line 60 to Human Services, Tab mentions that the center's proposed EOTC closure. We haven't been able to get any answer why the legislature feels that EOTC should close or where the people that live there should go. I work there, and my understanding is that EOTC operates efficiently and has a cost per bed that's similar to that in the private sector when you take into consideration all costs. It also provides 200 living wage jobs in the Pendleton community. As a facility, we've been tested time and time again against the highest standards of human rights and delivery of services by the state itself, and we pass every time. And most of the time we look real good. You're not going to be able to deliver the services, the kinds of people that we have, for any less money in any other kind of situation. I'm having to speak from the heart here. I'm an HCT1. I'm a direct care delivery service person. Because of the nature of the job and the fact that it pays good enough for me to live on, I've been able to stay in this job and really learn what it means. I guess the last thing I can say about it is that as a facility, Eastern Oregon Training Center comes under the heading of a sacred trust to the state, and when I say state, I mean all of us. These are the least of our citizens. They have the biggest problems, and we took on responsibility a long, long time ago and guaranteed their health, safety, and welfare, and I suggest that we keep going with that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your comments.
Yes, I'm Jim Littleton, president at Central Oregon Community College, and I'll be passing on to colleagues here very quickly. Central Oregon will be dealing not just with the funding level, but also with a revised funding formula. The reality of that is that $420 million, this institution will still suffer a $500,000 decline. It is only at the asked for $440 million level that we will even come close to matching what our funding was in the prior year. Now I will pass to my colleagues.
My name is Debbie Griffith, and I live in Bend. I'm a born and raised in Oregon, and I'm a non-traditional student, head of household. This is my third year at Central Oregon Community College, and I'm working on a four-year degree, transferring to Cascades campus next year. I am asking you to please not cut our funding. Our tuition is going up next year, and my concern is that tuition is going to keep being raised, and that the cost of a two-year degree is going to get so high that a student like myself will no longer be able to afford a two-year degree. At the end of this term, when I will receive my two-year degree after 3 years, I will be, if I went back to the workforce, I would be paying $353 in student loan repayment every month for 10 years. And then that amount is about what it should be for the debt I will incur after 2 years at a four-year degree, at a four-year college. So I'm asking you to please not cut our funding, and so that our tuition does not keep raising over the next, over the next years, whether it's 5 years, 10 years, whatever it is. Anyway, thank you for your time, and please help the students of the state. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, please.
I'm Connie Lee Bend, Oregon. As a board member, I took part in the devastating cuts 2 years ago at CSCC. At the time, we eliminated more than 30 full-time positions, raised tuition 10% in 1 year, closed centers serving more of our rural areas, encompassing 10,000 square miles. We closed several institutional programs and eliminated student support programs. Even with the funding being proposed in the legislature this year, we are looking at another 10% increase in tuition. We quickly need you to reconsider and support a funding level at and above the requested $440 million. While we know and understand and appreciate your reluctance to involve the legislature in the decisions about the funding formula, we want you to know that it would be devastating to see increases in statewide funding for community colleges and actual decreases in funding to growing areas like Central Oregon and the Rogue Valley, areas in critical need for that funding to keep pace with growth and higher demand. Recently, Deschutes County was identified as the fastest growing county in Oregon. It seems odd to provide additional funds for community colleges in general, but no new funds for the region with the most increased demand. Even during the years when we were able to grow earlier this decade, we were not able to keep pace with the demand and the long waiting list of students for many classes. In the last 2 years, We have had to cut back and now are meeting even less of that demand in an area where students have no other higher education opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Co-chair Scott and committee, my name is Alan Unger. I'm the mayor of the city of Redmond, said to be the fastest growing city in the state, located in the fastest growing county in the state. COCC is critical to our economic growth. We attracted a T-Mobile call center last year with over 600 new jobs. COCC was an important factor in T-Mobile's decision to come into Redmond. As a representative of Central Oregon cities, I urge you to support community college funding. We need higher education for successful economic growth. We have reviewed funding proposals with the college and understand anything less than $440 million means COCC will be severely challenged in continuing its service to Redmond and the rest of Central Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ben. We appreciate it very much. Let's go to Condon, please. Coos Bay will follow Condon.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Natalie Wilkins, and I work with the North Central ESD Early Education Program and Healthy Start Program for Gillum, Wheeler, and Sherman counties. We serve only 30 children within those three counties, but because we contract with community-based preschools, we help over 70 children within those three counties. Our Healthy Start program is in the unique situation, because we're so rural, that we are able to see every family that will accept services within the county, not just first birth. It is important for the early education system within Gillum County to work with the commission system. They have been a huge supporter of early education within this county and within Wheeler and Sherman counties as well, and it would be a loss for us to not have these funds. Thank you.
Thank you. Next.
My name is Gene Carlson. I'm Gene Carlson. I'm the superintendent of the Condon School District. I really appreciate the problems that you're going through. I just made a recommendation this last week to our school board that two of our 15 teachers no longer work for us. That process will probably continue. But not speaking about our problems, because you have big problems too. This community is not just the community of schools. It's not just the community of children's services. It's not just the community of senior services. It's a community of all of us. In the school districts, from our part, we provide education programs over the precise use that we're going through talking with you now. We have 15 programs that our kids can take that come from other places in the United States, primarily in Oregon and mostly in Gillum County. We're taking our Spanish, taught by a teacher in Spray, Oregon. We had web design taught by someone from Phoenix, Arizona. We are making every effort that we can to provide experiences for our children that will give them some ability to compete with the schools that have economy of scale. The economy of scale is a huge issue that no one speaks to or no one recognizes publicly. We have no economy of scale here. When I was in Corvallis, for the same number of dollars that we get here in Condon, we had three or four different foreign languages. There was orchestras. There were bands. We gave up band years ago. We gave up art years ago. We gave up music years ago. The only elective that we have in our school district that's specifically an elective program is Ag.
Time to start wrapping up.
All of those problems. I will wrap it up, and that is that I would stand for the Senate co-chair's number of dollars, but I would rather see part of that money go to the senior services.
Thank you very much. Next, please.
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Rob Myers. I appreciate the opportunity to be able to testify from home this time instead of coming down there. I want to talk very briefly about education service districts. Superintendent Carlson talked about public schools. It's a problem that we have out here, and I think most of you are familiar with the issue of ESD consolidation. This is the fourth time in four sessions it's come up. The five frontier rural ESDs comprise 2.7% of the entire revenues allocated to ESDs in the state of Oregon. They are 3.9% of the total revenues allocated to the top six ESDs in the northern Willamette Valley. If you consolidate three of the five smallest ESDs, the state would actually lose over $1 million in revenues that they generate back to in excess of their tax bases. In light of that situation, the five small ESDs have a budget proposal to be able to fund ESDs. It suggests that ESDs be funded by their tax bases and tax bases alone. There is an equitable component in that provides for the differences in tax bases that assures that approximately $105 million in unconstrained funds will be redirected to local school districts that now goes directly to ESDs. That's one thing that I'd like to talk about. The second thing is that in assisted living facilities, the Department of Human Services has suggested a 30% cut in the Medicaid reimbursement amount for assisted living facilities statewide. That essentially would result in the failure of many assisted living facilities around the state through no fault of their own. It would result in a substantial loss of jobs. And I'd like to point out very quickly that between ESD consolidation, the assisted living facility just in our area in Condon, we're talking about a loss of approximately 70 jobs. Well, that doesn't sound like very much, but it equates to almost 22,000 jobs in Multnomah County. So the equivalent economic impact is significant, and I think that's something that should be considered. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate the testimony. We will take Coos Bay next, and just to welcome Ontario, we understand and see you there. We appreciate your attendance. What we're doing is going in order, and I'm calling upon Ontario. You'll be next. What the ground rules, we'll have three people come up, and you have 2 minutes. We'll announce when you have about 5 seconds left, and we want you to kind of wrap it up. So welcome. We're pleased that you have joined us. And let's go to Coos Bay, please.
Chair Scott and members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity. My name is Judy McMakin. I'm the director of the Coos County Commission on Children and Families. Last week at the Joint Ways and Means Subcommittee on Human Services, Chair Representative Richardson asked us two questions. One, how does the State Commission impact the work of local commissions? And two, why do we need all those starts? In answer to the first question, I would like to say to you that the State Office is an extension of our local commission in that it provides expertise to local commissions so that all 36 of them do not duplicate the same efforts. They provide information on best practices, distribution formulas, outcome systems, evaluations, grants, and grants writing. This is important to us in Coos County because in the last 2 years we have received assistance and advice that has brought to us almost $400,000 in federal and state grants. This assistance is more important than ever in a declining economy like ours. In answer to the second question, I would like to inform you that not all of the counties in Oregon have all of the starts. In our county, we are able to serve approximately 40% of the children that need these programs, and we don't have all of the starts. We have some of them. The most important reason why I support all of the starts is that Coos County currently ranks number 4 in the state for child victimization and abuse. We used to be number 1, but the strong collaborative work of our early childhood partners has helped us move that statistic down. Another area that needs your help is the child victimization programs and our child advocacy centers. I urge your support of these programs for Coos County to continue this effort. Every time an early childhood program is cut, children are in peril. I urge you to not do that and to support the governor's budget to help those of us at the local level continue to hold the line for our children. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, please.
My name is David Bridgman from Coos Bay. I'm a Board of Education member here at Southwestern Oregon Community College. Appropriations for community colleges in 2001 through 2003 was $462 million. Since 2001, we've lost access for nearly 70,000 students through budget cuts. Many were part-time students that were visiting community colleges statewide for training and retraining. But we all know that community colleges provide powerful solutions for Oregon's economic recovery. The essential budget that was submitted to the governor for $440 million was in light of what it is we need to do our job, and still is significantly less than our funding level of 2001-2003. I'm sure you've all heard our mantra of 440 or fight, and with all due respect, we're sticking to it. As an elected official, I work hard for student access, and the college works really hard to serve its district needs. I ask for your support for our 440 for our budget. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, please.
Good evening. I'm Barbara Anderson. I have two chronically mentally ill family members. Thank you for the opportunity to share my concerns. There have been significant reductions in mental health services over the past two legislative sessions that have never been restored. These cuts have been significant. Families, hospitals, schools, mental health care workers, and public safety systems are stressed trying to cope with inadequate resources for the care of those in need. The President's New Freedoms Commission on Mental Health states, Americans must understand and send this message. Mental disability is not a scandal. It is an illness. And like physical illness, it is treatable, especially when the treatment comes from. But these workers and the mental health system need funds to do this. Please consider this. Thank you.
Thank you all very much. Now we'll go to to Ontario, and the Dalles, you will follow Ontario.
Thank you. My name is Peter Lawson. I am an Ontario resident. I am also on the Board of Education for Treasure Valley Community College, as well as on the Board of Directors for the Oregon Community College Association. We want to reiterate the previously stated request for $440 million for the community college system. I myself am a graduate of TVCC as well as the University of Oregon, and it's part of that community access and that academic preparedness that community colleges offer that enabled me to move on down the system and, in fact, come back and serve again on this board. We feel that our community college offers above and beyond academia, access to the performing arts. We really are the performing arts for this region. We offer access to workforce. We all know that there's a nursing shortage. Our program is one of the best in the state, if not the nation. Ours is an economy with a shrinking ag base. And so our vocational programs, our ag programs are absolutely critical for our area and for this economy. We are operating, in 2000 we were operating on $6.5 million worth of state funds. In 2005 it was $4.5 million. We've cut back and are operating with part-time instructors and feel that this is the opportunity and the time is now to move forward with adding additional instructors, with adding the ability to add additional programs and to start growing again. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, please.
My name is Christine Mosier Chrysler, and I am talking representing Malheur County Safe Court, which is an adult drug and alcohol treatment court program. I am speaking in reference to the trial court operations program option package number 102, giving information regarding what kind of programming we're providing to Malheur County. In September 2001, an implementation grant in the amount of $500,000 over 3 years was awarded to Malheur County by the Drug Court's Programs Office. This grant was funded, has funded the Drug Court Coordinator position for Malheur County since that time. This grant was sent to run out in August of 2004, however, was extended to June 31st, 2005. At that time, without full funding under Package 102, this position will cease to exist and the program will not have the staffing needed to ensure that information sharing and fund management are done on a regular basis. The Malheur County Safe Court is a cooperative effort led by the Malheur County Circuit Court with participating agencies including the Department of Human Services, Self-Sufficiency, and Child Welfare Programs, Malheur Community Corrections, Malheur County District Attorney's Office, the law firm of Rader, Soddard & Perez, Lifeways Training and Employment Consortium, Ontario Police Department, and the Alcohol Recovery Center. The appropriate flow of information to all team members listed above is the duty of the coordinator. The coordinator also maintains all records with regard to the program, organizes all court sessions, writes protocol for the program, manages grant stream funding, different aspects of the program, for treatment for participants, training for team members and personnel, develops systems of billing and payment and participating agencies. The coordinator position of a treatment court ensures that the program is functioning and able to provide services. One of our recent graduates entered the program at age 22 with 5 children, all in state foster care. She had never held a job, was addicted to methamphetamine, and unable to care for herself, let alone her children. Since entering the program, she has been able to complete the drug treatment, obtain and maintain a full-time job, get custody of all 5 of her children, all under the age of 7, marry the father of her children, and graduate from Safe Court. The savings to taxpayers with one graduate alone is immeasurable. You could look for the cost of having 5 children in foster care for 1 year and see a savings that is remarkable. If this were the only person whose life was improved, their choice to enter a complete treatment program would be worth the investment. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead, please.
Hello, thank you for taking the time to listen to us. I'm Tim Rich, a sophomore here at Treasure Valley Community College. Since I've been a student here, I've seen many changes in the landscape, not only here on the college campus, but throughout the community. We've seen the shutdown of the NISA sugar factory. We've also seen the replacement of those jobs with lower-paying jobs, such as Super Walmart coming in, we've got Home Depot and things like that. But those aren't the types of jobs that we need to have to provide for our families. The community college is the solution that we have to provide for our families. If we get up to the 440, we won't only replace what we're losing, but we will also increase the services that we can provide. Not only with the ag and with the performing arts department, but we can also improve our biology and our computer programs that desperately need that. I've seen several full-time employees retire and not be able to be replaced, and I know the quality has lacked there. And from a student's perspective, I know that our administration is doing the best job possible, but we have seen an increase in tuition, 50% in fact, and it comes to a point where we can't afford it, and it creates a cycle of poverty. If we can't afford to come to college, then we can't pull ourselves out of the economic situation that we find ourselves in. So, once again, I would just like to emphasize the importance of getting the budget for community colleges up to the $440 million. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ontario. We'll go to the Dalles, please.
Hello, my name is Dr. Ernest Keller. I live in Wasco County, and I have been a board member or a budget committee member for the last 25 out of 26 years of this college's history. In all of that time, I've seen a lot of changes, and we're very excited about improvements in the college and improvements in the community's work base. However, I'm sitting in one of the buildings that we're able to save, but we're going to lose something like 32,000 square feet of area that we could be putting on classes. And so while I'm very supportive, and it is our priority to support the $44 million, the 5514 capital construction bill is just as important to us, because it will provide us more capacity building opportunities to provide more instruction and high quality instruction. You may have heard that the Google company is coming to town. It's a very successful company. It's last year it had 1,000% increase in its revenue, and so we're very excited about that. But we also said that we stood ready to assist them. We're kind of short of facilities, and we're very nervous about the capacity to do what we really need to do to help that organization move into our town and provide very well-paying jobs. I'm going to turn this over now to Sarah, a very capable student here at Columbia Gorge Community College.
Thank you very much.
My name is Sarah Charlotte, and I'm here as a student asking for more funding for the community colleges, with, of course, my school, Columbia Gorge Community College, forefront in my mind. We need a variety of classes here to give students an opportunity to pursue their goals, whatever they may be. I'm going to a four-year school because Columbia Gorge does not offer does not currently offer a technology program, which is what I'm interested in. Even working through my transfer degree is difficult when the classes I need to transfer are not offered here. I have to leave my community to pursue my education because my school can't offer the classes that I need. Some of my fellow students who are interested in nursing are thinking of leaving the area to pursue this goal, even though this is our school's primary program. This is because the program can just not let in as many students as are interested in getting through it in the time that they are hoping to find themselves in a better job. The smaller atmosphere here at the community college has helped me and others prepare ourselves for school, whether it's to stay here or go to a four-year university. I would not have had the chance for an education if I didn't have the comfort of a community college to fit my needs. So on behalf of me and all other community college students, I ask for more funding for our schools. Thank you.
Thank you very much. LeGrand, you will follow the Dell.
Please. We've got one more, is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Co-Chair Scott, pardon me. Thank you for providing us this opportunity. You've heard from many of the colleges already tonight, the students, community members, staff, faculty, and board members of the need, especially I think in the rural community college areas where our students have limited access for post-secondary education, as you just heard from one of our students. And the colleges do provide quality learning and teaching, also the ability to transfer to higher ed. We're very actively involved right now with the P20 system, where we're working with our partners, K-12, also higher education. We're fortunate in the fact that Oregon State University Extension is co-located with us here on this campus. They bring the aspect of research to us, also the aspect of stronger communities and stronger families. I want to reiterate what Dr. Keller said to you. The colleges desperately need that $440 million revenue for our operating, and we need that capital construction for the six colleges that have been identified. And you may ask why. Well, we are. The colleges are the vehicle for a well-educated population, which also brings strong communities, attracts businesses to our area, brings increased tax revenues for not only our region and the state. And we at Columbia Gorge Community College are about building dreams and realities while we transform lives. And you can help us do that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. LeGrand, up next, please. And that'll be
good evening, Mr. Chairman.
Hamilton on for the second time.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman. My name is Hosro Fatemi, and I'm president of Eastern Oregon University. And I would like to share with you the state of higher education in Eastern Oregon for the next few minutes. and more specifically the opportunities which are available for the students of the region. At best, they are inadequate and they are getting a lot worse. If you look at the numbers statewide, out of total population of adults, 25% have a college degree, a baccalaureate or higher. The same percentage for Eastern Oregon is only 15%, which is 60% of the state average. What is particularly troubling is that these numbers are moving in the opposite direction. If you look at the college age population, statewide 30% are in college. That means in a few years 30% of adults will have college degrees. For Eastern Oregon, that's only 14.5%. That means that actually the trend is downward, and the more we let this trend continue, the worse the situation will be. While there are many components to economic development, none is more important than higher education. We cannot attract investment in the region without a pool of qualified workforce, whether baccalaureate degree holders or community college graduates. We need to move on that as fast as we can, because without it, economic development will not be achieved in the region. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Greetings, Mr. Chair. My name is John Lamoureux. I am Union County Commissioner. I've got a few random thoughts that I'd like your committee to consider. We are cutting valued programs for the uninsured, for kids and elderly due to a lack of funds. Yet money was available to pay over $220 million in the last 2 years for the Public Employees Retirement System's post-employment health care plan. In the last 2 years, PERS spent over $421.4 million in stockbroker commissions and investment fees. This biennium, they plan to spend $500 million more in these fees. This is $106 million more than was allocated for in the governor's entire community college budget. Because of ORS 293, the vast majority of money the states invest is invested outside of the state of Oregon. Less than 0.25% of the funds available for investment in the state of Oregon are earmarked for investment in the Oregon Investment Fund. We are told we are out of money, yet the top 300 retirees with PERS will get to split $70 million in retirement salaries in the next biennium. The top retiree alone will receive over $440,000 in retirement salary in the next biennium. The cost of living increases for the privileged 300 will add another $1.5 million to the total cost during the next 2 years. The 30-year PERS member, in the last analysis done, gets retired 106% of his or her highest salary at the average age of 51. The monthly pension payroll for PERS employees has climbed from $58 million a month in 1995 to $210 million a month today. And here we sit begging for crumbs to keep programs such as Oregon Project Independence and the Commission on Children and Families from being eliminated. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, please.
For record, my name is Garen Lamoureux, and I'm a senior at Eastern Oregon University, and I'm involved with student government here. I'd like to talk to you tonight about tuition and how its increases have negatively affected me and other students at Eastern Oregon University. In 2001, for an academic year, tuition fees was $3,387 at EOU. Now, just 4 years later, it costs $5,500, an increase of over $2,100. You can call me one of the lucky ones. I'm lucky because as a history major and a future teacher, I will graduate with no debt through scholarships, working 20 to 30 hours a week, and living at home. Last term, in fact, after tuition fees, I still had $14 in my checking account with which to add to the local economy. Many, however, are not so lucky. Many have had to take on massive debt loads, and actually, sadly, many more have had to drop out. One dear example to me is Royce Woosley, who was a friend of mine who began attending Eastern Oregon University hoping to become a graphic designer. But as tuition increased, he was forced to drop out and spent the last year working at a minimum wage job and a movie theater. He's only recently begun to take classes again part-time and is still far away from completing his dream of graduating. The whole Oregon University system has been hurt by the severe tuition increases. Full-time equivalent enrollment has decreased by 0.4%, and headcount has increased system-wide by only 0.6%. compare this to the 1.8% increase OUS was anticipating, and you can see that we have a problem. The double-digit tuition increases have played a part in slower enrollment growth from what has been anticipated. A tuition freeze not only helps students statewide, but will definitely help students in Eastern Oregon attend public universities. Eastern Oregon University students need your help this biennium. Also, with my time remaining, I'd like to encourage you to fund the Oregon Opportunity Grant to include all eligible recipients, as that is also Oregon's only need-based state aid for college students. Thank you for your time and consideration of this important issue.
Thank you very much. Now we'll go to Pendleton, please. And then we'll...
Hello, my name is... Ready to begin?
Yeah, go ahead, Pendleton. Ben will follow. Yes.
Hello, my name is Art Pryor. I'm from Echo, Oregon, Umatilla County. I'm a local farmer, and I help run a family farm, a fairly large farm. We grow quite a few different things, a lot of wheat, grass seed, a lot of peas, a lot of vegetable crops, lima beans, carrots. And I'm here on behalf of the Extension and Agricultural Research Facility, speaking as a farmer, as an end user of some of the research that we get from those, to explain the situation that local farmers and actually farmers all over the United States are confronting with the world community competing for markets. Our farm, like any other farm, has gone through an evolution of changes over the last 18 years, and it will continue to go through a lot of evolution of changes, not unlike any other farm, for the next 20 years. And with those evolution of changes, we experience a lot of issues, mostly a lot of painful issues like learning about new diseases, pests, and production issues. We rely on our extension and research people to help us overcome that learning curve so we can stay ahead of that learning curve and be productive and produce what the market demands. We feel that investing in our extension and agricultural research people is investing in our community and investing in the United States. And in order for an agricultural producer in this day and age to be viable, we need people like those, the people I'm explaining to you, to help us out and support us.
Thank you. I'm Larry Bishop. I'm a local beef farmer. I also farm in Walla County, Washington. I am the Pendleton Research Station Liaison Committee Chair right now. I'm here to put a plug in, I guess, for the Extension Service and also for all the experiment stations in Oregon. I beg you not to make any further cuts in the funding for the stations or for the services. They're all critical. We cannot rely on private companies to do the research for us. It has to be done locally, because OSU has always been responsive to the local farmers. The Pendleton Research Station has been here since the 1930s, and I want to see it remain here and remain a viable source for information for farmers all across the Columbia Basin. OSU always looks to the future, and I think that we have to I'm getting off my notes here. Well, as I said before, agriculture is a major industry, and the station supports it, and that's what I'm getting at, I guess. I'll have to send this to you in written form. Thank you.
My name is Neil Christofferson. I work in Boardman, Oregon, for the Port of Morrow. I'm the environmental supervisor. And in my job, we use over 5,000 acres of irrigated crop ground to irrigate over 1 billion gallons of what is previously known as wastewater from different vegetable processing plants, Tillamook cheese, and also a power plant. In an effort to enhance the ag and the type of work we do, we work very closely with the Hermiston Ag Research Center. In fact, the Hermiston Ag Research Center has come to our aid in starting up a consortium of all the processing plants in the area, working directly with DEQ in an effort to enhance the overall use of this previously known wastewater as a good production for agriculture. Now, in doing this, using this venue, it's responsible for directly for quite a few hundred jobs, and indirectly quite a few thousand jobs just here in the area. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. Ben, please. And Condon, you're on deck.
Hello, members of the committee. My name is Kathy Thompson, and I'm the program manager for the Deschutes County Healthy Start, Ready, Set, Go program. Over the past 10 years, our program has served over 1,000 families with intensive home visiting services. With the last biennium, the cuts in the last biennium, the number of families served was reduced by about 50. The number of first persons in Deschutes County increased by 9% in 2004, and the number of families that we're able to serve who are eligible for our program is only about 60%. Health and Start has had a proven accountability system under the Commission on Children and Families and with measurable outcomes over the past 10 years. The Deschutes County Commission on Children and Families ensures a continuum of services while avoiding duplication by forming partnerships among agencies that serve children and families. We're not asking for increase in funding. We're asking to support the governor's budget to maintain funding at the current level. Now I'd like to introduce Kristen Rutledge, who is a parent in our program.
Hi, my name is Kristen Rutledge. I've been involved with the program for a year now. I started the program just wanting to get some information on development and my child's growth, and it's proven to be a lot more useful in more ways than I can tell you. My worker has helped me leave an abusive situation. She's helped me to find the strength to continue with college. And
please speak up.
Okay. She's been available any time I've ever needed her. This program is amazing. It's helpful to any family, I would agree. My worker has also introduced me to Mountain Star, which is another program in the community, and that has been very useful to me also. So I just want to advocate for these two programs that have changed my life. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, members of the committee. My name is Tammy Bainey, and I chair the Deschutes County Commission on Children and Families, and I also co-chair the Meth Action Coalition here in Bend. And I want to thank you for taking the time to meet with all of us. And one of the beautiful things that we're feeling here in Deschutes County are all of the great people that are here tonight to share with you the importance of our community, as well as all of those across the other Eastern Oregon counties. And what we are seeing is an example of what the Commission on Children and Families does. And we facilitate within communities to bring members together to leverage funds, to help fund, to help programs strategize, to help educate the public, and to advocate as well with folks such as yourself. And I'm really proud to live in this community with so many people that are really engaged and interested in the health of the community. We are lean, as with all of the other counties in the state. We have been cut many times in the last legislative sessions, especially in the last two legislative sessions. And it has been remarkable to watch the programs be able to adjust themselves to be more efficient with less and to be able to collaborate better with other agencies and to break down barriers, share line staff, share buildings, share rent. So one of the things that I really want to let you know is that we're doing the work that you've asked us to do. We are lean. We are making sure that we are accountable for the work that we are doing. We are making sure that we are not duplicating services within our communities, and we are working together to have a healthy area to live. And so thank you very much for your time. I just want to reiterate how important the system of the Commission on Children and Families is to our community. Thank you.
Thank you,
members of the committee. Chair Scott, Chair Schrader, I appreciate this opportunity to speak with you. My name is Hillary Saraceno, and I'm the Director of the Commission on Children in Deschutes County. And I'm here to speak for those who cannot, the children, the young children, and we are very concerned about the proposed cuts to children's programs in Deschutes County, and we caution you about some of the unintended consequences that may result by some of your proposed cuts and your changes that you're proposing. Each county has many public and private supports, from prenatal care to public health, school system, and the commission serves to fill in the gaps for those kids who are needing additional kinds of services. And it includes targeted prevention services. It provides a safety net. We've already cut many programs that are part of that safety net, Together for Children in the Relief Nursery being just two examples. And they were significantly reduced. Other programs were significantly reduced. We have cut staff and we have cut work hours. And under the governor's plan, we would have further cuts. New cuts would further hinder our ability to improve and protect the well-being of Oregon's children, particularly those 0 to 5 year olds. The impact of these cuts would further hinder the impact of these cuts are extensive when added to the wider set of cuts, cost-saving measures that were done in 2002. We took an additional 12% cut, and we're not asking for more dollars, we're just asking for no more cuts. Prevention services cost less than foster care, cost less than abuse, addiction treatment, unemployment, and less than youth and adult incarceration. Thank you.
Thank you. Now we'll go to Condo, please.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Lisa Helms, and I'm the director of the Wheeler County Juvenile Department, and I also coordinate the Wheeler County Court-Appointed Special Advocate Program. I'm speaking tonight in opposition of the elimination of the Juvenile Crime Prevention Funds and the transfer of the Commission on Children and Family Funds to the Department of Human Services. I just want to briefly illustrate what those cuts mean for Wheeler County, which is the smallest county in the state. First of all, we are at risk of losing our school-based counseling program, which is funded with juvenile crime prevention dollars along with Commission on Children and Family dollars. And that program provides a mental health counselor in our three schools, which gives all the youth access to the counselor who want it or need it. It also cuts the juvenile department budget by almost $16,000 per year, which is about 20% to 30% of the juvenile department budget. The third thing is we're at risk of losing two preschools in the county by eliminating the Commission on Children and Families funds. And finally, the court-appointed special advocate program is an important part of the Commission on Children and Families funds. It provides a volunteer advocate for every abused and neglected child in the county, and it's grown to be a very successful program. Just want to thank you for the opportunity to speak, and thank you.
Thank you very much. Coos Bay, you will follow Condon, so be prepared. Thanks. Go ahead, sir.
Hello, I'm Ernie Barnett. I'm here representing Summit Springs Village, which is an assisted living facility in the middle of Condon. We have been struggling very badly in the last year or two. Hard to make ends meet. And now I understand you're going to cut Medicaid funds. You know, when you cut Medicaid funds to these seniors out here in this assisted living facility, you're cutting the heart out of the facility. I've never understood why you consider cutting it, because you're not paying any place close to what it costs to run one of these facilities at this point in time. You can see behind me, there's a large group of people here this evening representing a whole segment of this Condon area. I noticed the other people are speaking. We have the most people in this room. You know, the reason we do is because when you make decisions at your level and they come out here, they affect each one of these people that's sitting here this evening, and that's why they're here, folks. This is very simple. You cut funds and it hurts the little communities the most. There's not very many of us. We're struggling, we're fighting, and we're going to continue fighting. But please, don't cut the senior programs. It's just killing our seniors. We're the only assisted living facility within 80 miles. We service the local people here. Most of the people, residents that we have in our facility, grew up in this community, lived in this community.
and they're hoping to die in this community. If Summit Springs Village goes under, folks, they're going to have to go someplace else for that same service, and it's going to cost you folks a lot more money no matter where they go. Anyhow, keep us in mind out here, all of Eastern Oregon. We're struggling under all the rules. The education system's struggling. We're all struggling. Think about it when you make those decisions and say on what effect it has on our communities out here. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next, please.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Teddy Fennern, and I work for the Gillen County Commission on Children and Families. I believe that rural counties will be negatively impacted the most if Senator Schrader's budget passes. The reduction of $22 million from the Commission on Children and Families budget would be the demise of the commission system. This dollar amount, approximately half of our budget, basically is the amount of the Healthy Start program, which is a proven and effective form of reducing child abuse and neglect, and oftentimes in these rural counties, it's the only form of these services to our families. The federal dollar match of the Healthy Start program is also $3 million that would be lost. The deletion of the $6.3 million in the juvenile crime prevention dollars also has a federal match of $3.3 million that would be lost. Again, in these rural communities, these are the only dollars that are available to work on juvenile crime prevention. Placing local commissions under the administration of an already overburdened DHS will mean the loss of local control, and gutting the commission's prevention initiatives will cost the state much more in the long run than it will save in the up-and-coming biennium. We urge you to find a way to sustain the commission system at the state and local levels. The state commission staff is valuable in gathering and providing information to the local staff so that the wheel does not have to be recreated at 36 local levels. CCNF has been instrumental in helping to increase young children's readiness to learn, reduction of the high school dropout rate, and encouraging youth to avoid substance abuse and delinquent behavior, and increasing the health and well-being of children and families in every community. We have been very successful so far, but our work is far from done. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Chris Bay, you're up, please. Followed by...
Mr. Chairman and members.
Ontario,
Mr. Chairman and members.
All right, Chris.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'm Jim Ware. I'm the curriculum director for North Bend School District, and I'm representing the school district today to ask you to consider $5.4 million for the state school fund. At the $5.0 million level, our school district is $1.7 million short of being able to maintain our current program. Currently, our proposed budget being presented to the budget committee tonight, that was closed 10 days, used $200,000 in accrual, reduced our high school and middle school elementary staff by 11.63 teachers with the complete elimination of our home ec program, dance, an alternative program, and a reduction in our English, math, science, music sections, and with the average class size increasing to approximately 34 at the high school, 31 at the middle school, and 28 at the elementary school, making it difficult to meet the high academic standards required by No Child Left Behind and by our state assessment. We're also reducing our custodial services by $200,000 and most likely thinning our classrooms every other day, and reducing clerical and administrative services by over $200,000. Even at the $5.4 billion level, we'd be, still be $1 million short of serving our 2,210 students. Coming on a $2 million shortfall last year, this is devastating to our program. So we would encourage you to look at $5.4 billion for our state school fund. Thank you.
My name is Nancy Gehart, and I live in North Bend and in Coos County. I want to thank you for the opportunity for me to speak for the first time at a public hearing, and I'd like to speak in favor of restoring OSU extension budget to 2001. Extension offers programs for young people, old people, middle-aged people, families, just about everyone in our community. They have the 4-H program, they have Master Preserver program, Master Gardener program, and family community education programs. These programs offer understanding to our community with health issues such as diabetes, heart attacks, cancer, just to name a few. This coming year, we're going to be discussing Alzheimer's disease and identity theft, which impact all of the people in our community. OSU Extension makes a major has made a major difference in my life with all of the things that I've learned when I get to do the instructing for the classes. I'd like to summarize by asking you again to please restore the OSU Extension budget 2001 to 2003. And lastly, our community has voted an extension district, therefore we help to pay some of the extension expenses. So you can see how important it is for our community to have our extension service to continue as it has in the past. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, please.
Co-chairs and member of the Ways and Means Committee. I am Jane Baumgarten, a resident of North Bend and Coos County, and an AARP volunteer who happens to focus on legislative issues. There is much concern regarding access to the continuum of long-term care, from home and community-based programs to institutional care. A new statewide survey of AARP Oregon members indicate that long-term care services are top priority, and the survey has been sent to the legislature. We realize there are budgetary problems, but the severity of the proposed cuts for all long-term care services will further cripple Oregon's long-term care system. Proposed cuts to Oregon's Project Independence, adult foster care, and general assistance affect the most vulnerable Oregonians. With the current revenue situation, we understand that tough decisions are necessary to balance the budget. However, with the House and Senate's agreement to increase spending by $400 million, it would be possible to restore some of the proposed cuts to long-term care services. I urge you to continue your efforts to address the needs of seniors and people with disabilities. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ontario, are you still there? We'll go to the Dalles, please.
Hello, my name is Carolyn Bondurant, and I am from Hood River County. I am here in support of OSU Extension. I've lived in Oregon more than 25 years and have used them for a multitude of issues and concerns when raising my family. And OSU Extension utilizes more than 30,000 volunteers who contribute to about 2 million volunteers hours each year. Because I am such strong support of Extension, I am a volunteer for Extension in the 4-H program. I have been a volunteer for more than 10 years, and I have seen the many children in our communities succeed in school because of their knowledge and background in 4-H, both in the ag areas and doing presentation and educational displays. Often we see teachers who or hear from teachers who recognize those students who have a 4-H background. Additionally, we are reaching out to Latino students and students of other cultures and have been very successful at incorporating their families as well as the families of our Caucasian families into the program. We wouldn't have 30,000 volunteers across the state if we didn't use parents and families to help us through these projects. The basic level of the faculty to facilitate the programs that we do have is very minimal. In many of our rural areas, it's only a half-time position, but the communities pull together as well as Extension, who supports our community and helps us to build strong families. From my point of view, I have seen just a great success in the way they have helped us learn how to be good leaders and how to help motivate other parents and families to follow us so that the program will continue. Please restore our budget to the loss that we had in 2001-03. And as a result, we feel that we can continue our programs that benefit all children in our communities. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, please, and LeGrand, you will follow.
Good evening. My name is Scott Fitch. I live in Hood River. I wish to speak on support of the Oregon State University Extension Program. My participation through this has been with the Master Gardeners Program. It has been a real privilege to work with the county agent and the director of the Master Gardener Program to further my understanding. In turn, or as payback, this knowledge is then shared with the public. This relieves the county agent from answering routine questions, which allows him to serve the public to a greater degree. During the past year, my main involvement has been with development of a backyard compost demonstration site. This is a portion of the Learning Garden development. Though the site is still in development, we have had 3 classes with 60 participants. The Master Gardeners in Hood River County and also within the Dalles have had a number of 2,426 contacts with a total of 2,481 volunteer hours contributed to this program. Going back to the compost demonstration site, it was enabled us to participate for 2% reduction in calculating our recycling credits, and we feel that it was a significant help to the community. The importance of nurturing existing programs by reducing the number of employees to be terminated with consideration of replacing these full-time equivalents should be eliminated and reduced to its previous number. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, please.
Co-Chair Scott, Co-Chair Schrader, my name is Sharon Gdara, and I am from Hood River County. I'm also the director of a 4-county behavioral health center serving Hood River, Wasco, Sherman, and Gillam counties. We provide mental health services, addiction treatment, and also services to persons with developmental disabilities. I would like to thank the committee for recommending a restoration of the governor's cuts in community mental health. And I would also like to thank the committee especially for recommending the restoration of funds for a ward at Eastern Oregon Psychiatric Center, or EOPC, in Pendleton. Eastern Oregon counties are very dependent on those hospital beds for people with the most severe mental illness, and there is often no alternatives. As it is, sometimes beds are not available or there are long waits in the hospital ER rooms for people that were waiting to place in beds. I would like to also point out that mental health and addiction services since 2001 has lost $71 million. Our local counties are not standing still. We're trying to find other resources. We were successful in competing for a Children's Mental Health Initiative grant, or Systems of Care. We opened the doors for that grant in October, and in 6 months we have 70 families enrolled with children with very severe emotional disorders, and now we have a waiting list of 16 as an illustration towards the need for early intervention services and more wraparound dollars for children. Also, in a very recent study conducted in Wasco County of repeat and multiple offenders in the jail, over 40% of those persons incarcerated multiple times have severe addiction and or mental health needs. I would like to respectfully urge the Senate to adopt the House recommendations for adding additional dollars for addiction enhancement treatment and prevention. And I would also like to urge the committee to help restore some of the addiction dollars for the continuum of care that we have lost and so desperately need. The cost of leaving persons suffering with addictions and mental illness is too high. I'd also like to thank the committee for this opportunity to testify without having to drive to Salem.
Sharon, as the other co-chair, I just want to thank you. You're the first person in all the meetings that actually thanked us for restoring some of the programs in our budget-limited environment. So I appreciate that very, very much. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now we'll go to LeGrand.
Hey. Hello, co-chairs, Senator Schrader, Representative Scott, among other members of the committee. My name is Ty Doobie. So that you know I have a basis of knowledge, I need to tell you that I'm an 11-year member of the Oregon State Police, but my opinions are those of a taxpayer and citizen and do not necessarily represent the opinions of the agency. It is absolutely appalling what's happened to law enforcement in this state. While I know that Oregon is in tough financial shape and education is very important, without strong, consistent, statewide law enforcement, we the citizens basically have nothing. When the state police was formed in 1931, Governor Julius Meyer knew this, and over the years it has become even more vital that Oregon is a statewide police force that can handle the crime problems of today, especially in rural areas of the state. I think most citizens would be amazed if they knew that the approximate 16 cents on every dollar spent on public safety is almost entirely the prison budget. I don't have the exact numbers, but I think the state police receives about 1 cent for every dollar. While local city police agencies and county sheriffs exist, it's absolutely crucial that the Oregon State Police take a lead role in law enforcement throughout the state. If the legislature is serious about curbing the methamphetamine epidemic, fighting terrorism, and tackling other major crime issues, homicides, violent crimes, financial crimes, internet crimes, white-collar crimes, just to name a few, I know from experience that you need to completely and adequately fund the state police. I know that there has been a lot of talk about dedicated funding for the patrol division, which we sorely need. Additionally, I think taxpayers expect the state police to be fully funded for their involvement in major crimes as well, drug enforcement, as well as other complex criminal investigations that cities and counties simply can't handle. I want to talk real briefly specifically about drug enforcement in the state of Oregon. Drug enforcement right now is in the worst shape that it's ever been. Back in the early 80s, the Oregon State Police had nearly 80 full-time narcotic detectives assigned to local task forces around the state. Cities and counties look to the state police for leadership, training, policies, and statewide cohesiveness. Today, drug teams around the state are basically non-existent and relatively ineffective, as there are only 8 full-time state police narcotic detectives. The only way drug enforcement truly works is when the state police has fully staffed drug teams or is in a position to assign detectives and sergeants to participate and supervise these teams. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, please.
Next, please.
Thank you, Senator Schrader, Representative Scott, and members of the committee. For the record, I am Vicki Bergiotti, Director of the Union County Commission on Children and Families. I'm speaking this evening on behalf of 12 partners attending this hearing in support of Senate Bill 5505. The Senate budget proposes reducing the Oregon Commission on Children and Families funding, eliminating juvenile crime prevention resources, and terminating the State Commission. It is positioned as an efficiency measure since there is already a Children and Family Division within Department of Human Services. A review of services within the Division of Children and Families shows in child welfare the division provides intake and investigation of reports of child abuse and neglect, parent education and family counseling for founded cases of abuse and neglect, supervision of parental visits for children who have been removed from the home. Within self-sufficiency, the division provides intake for food stamps and temporary assistance for needy families, jobs program, and mental health referrals. The DHS Child and Family Division is reactive to state and federal laws. Numerous direct services are provided, but there is little planning to address community needs, nor attempts to engage or mobilize the community. The focus is on intervention and treatment. These functions are diametrically different from the work of county commissions on children and families. In 1993, legislators conferred the essential role of prevention on the commission system to foster healthy children, strong families, and caring communities. The commission system honors and encourages local input and decision-making to impact state policy and is the only systemic and collaborative approach to prevention in Oregon. The Senate budget represents a loss in local control. It is a significant resource reduction for counties, the impact being close to $34.5 million. Folding the Oregon Commission on Children and Family System into DHS would result in more regulation and far less flexibility. I encourage you to reject the Senate budget and support Senate Bill 5505 as proposed by Governor Kulongoski. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Pendleton, you will follow LeGrand, please. Go ahead, please.
Hello. Members of the committee, Senator Schrader and Representative Scott, my name is Rocky DeSimone, and I am a 27-year veteran of the Oregon State Police. And I do have to say I have the same qualifier that these opinions are mine and not necessarily of the agency. I joined the state police in 1978. At that time, there were approximately 650 patrol troopers assigned to various locations around the state. The sworn strength of the patrol division has plummeted to approximately 240 troopers today. That's less than one half of when I was hired. That puts the patrol division's sworn strength at approximately a 1960 era's level. In other words, the people of remote communities are paying for taxes for services, but they're not getting any services. We cannot get patrol division troopers into very remote areas on any type of schedule. They're too busy handling calls for service on busy interstate highways or more populated areas. And in fact, these people in the rural, very rural communities are subsidizing a lot of out-of-state users for our service. The patrol division supports local agencies with several types of services which are fiscally impossible to provide in a small local agency. Some of these would be SWAT, mobile response teams, and collision reconstruction. The collision reconstructionists can provide testimonies in everything from vehicle crashes to murders. And then in February 2003, we fell to our lowest of lows. The Oregon State Police laid off 130 sworn troopers and 263 professional support staff. While I hear talk of a lot of troopers and we need more troopers, we cannot forget the infrastructure support staff of the department. Troopers cannot function without support staff, equipment, and training. This means more dispatchers, replacing aging radio systems, and also replacing an aging fleet of patrol cars, a lot of which are running upwards over 100,000 miles. Oregon State Police troopers are known nationwide for extensive recruit and ongoing training. Lately, training has been held to a bare minimum, covering only most essential areas. I will just end with saying it is time for the Oregon State Police Department to refund the level, which will start us on a rebuilding process. The goal of the legislature should be to add another 300 patrol division troopers over the course of the next three budget cycles. This rebuilding has to come as a priority of the legislature. Providing a police service level of the 1960s in this day and age is just totally unacceptable. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. We'll go to Pendleton now, please.
Chairman Schrader and committee, thank you for this opportunity to testify before you. My name is Bob Johns, fifth generation farmer, past president of the Oregon Wheat Growers League. First of all, I'd like to speak about community college funding. Adequate community college funding allows rural community colleges to meet the diverse needs of its constituents through programs and services. I have benefited over the last 30 years through the Farm Business Program at Blue Mountain Community College. This program has offered to me and many other area farmers and ranchers valuable lessons and information to farm business success. Proper funding allows for the Farm Business Management Program, the whole ag program, and other programs like these to continue to develop a qualified workforce and business development for a strong rural economy. I encourage you to fully fund the $440 million for community colleges and workforce development for a strong Oregon. Speaking to Oregon State University's needs, Oregon wheat producers invest in Oregon State University research programs through good times and bad. And speaking to Senate Bill 5513, the Oregon State University budget legislation, I'm asking you to vote to bring this budget back to the 2001 funding level. The wheat industry, since 1972, has offered in excess of $8.3 million through its grower assessment dollars. The Uyghurs League respectfully requests you to support and reinstate the funding level of the 2001 $102 million for the Agricultural Experiment Station, the Forest Research Laboratory, and Extension Service. This would require an add-back of $7 million to the Experiment Station, $4 million to the Extension Service, and $1 million to the Forest Research Laboratory. Thank you in advance for your support for these vital programs, which directly add to the sustainability, economic build, viability of Oregon's agriculture industry. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, this is Rick Curran, CEO of Horizon Project in Umatilla County. I'd first and foremost like to thank our legislators, Dave, Greg, and Bob Jensen for their support in all of the endeavors that we all participate in out here in Eastern Oregon. I'm speaking today as a business owner and a member of the Blue Mountain College Community College Board of Directors. And what I would like to speak to quickly, I know you've heard about all the numbers and the cuts and the sorts of things that are the litany these days in the environment in which we all live. But I would like to speak specifically to a group of folks that I think we have all as Oregonians done a disservice to, and that is the K through 12 young persons that have gone through our system in the last 10 years. As an employer of over 150 individuals, I find that many of these individuals are not ready to join the workforce. And the only hope that we have is through the community college system. We've been working very closely with Blue Mountain Community College to continually and continuously educate our workforce so that they are, in fact, productive citizens. Any cuts to the community college system, which is our last bastion towards education and economic development, would be pure folly. So I really hope and pray that you folks will be considering that as you go into deliberation over the budget matters. Thank you very much.
Co-chair, members of the committee, I'm Jan Elner, a small business owner here in Pendleton, to speak on behalf of the small business owners of the community. We just want to make sure that we kind of understand this, that small business is really true economic development. 96% of Oregon's businesses have fewer than 50 employees. 70% of the jobs created in Oregon are created by small businesses. We feel that our community college is a real link to our economic development resources and our success. It's the hiring pool for our employees, which we feel will determine our success out there. They're not really, our employees aren't born just ready to go to work. They're developed, they're trained, they're educated. We want to make sure our employees are the ones who generate, that you understand that our employees are the ones that generate the taxes that support everything else in the budget. We just want to make sure that the budget for economic development is a budget that supports our small businesses and the small business owners. Thank you.
Go to Ben now, and Condon, you will follow Ben.
Good evening. First of all, I'd like to thank the committee for taking the time to hold these hearings today and to allow us to voice our opinions. My name is Michael Payne, and I'm from Redmond, Oregon. I'm a graduate of both Central Oregon Community College and OSU Cascade Campus. But I'm not here tonight to talk to you about the excellent education I received at both of those institutions, although they were second to none. Instead, what I'm here to talk about is the proposed budget cuts and the new funding formula. Ladies and gentlemen of the committee, on Saturday here in Bend, we looked to some bad news on the front page of our local paper, The Bulletin. I'm going to read the headline to you because I'm sure you probably can't see it. It says, Monaco coach to cut 500 jobs, largest Bend manufacturer moving operations. Unfortunately, here in Central Oregon, we don't have 500 manufacturing jobs to replace the ones for these displaced workers. They will have to be retrained. Their continued well-being as members of our community and as vital members of our workforce is going to depend on what we can do for them as a community. Central Oregon has historically been sort of a microcosm of the economic health of Oregon, and right now Deschutes County, Jefferson County, and Cook County all outpace the state in unemployment. We're about to add 500 more to those numbers. What I wanted to do tonight was to put a face on the people that will be affected by the budget cuts, should they happen. It won't be students like me. It will be people that are just going through their lives trying to live by the rules and make a living for their families. In the short term, Central Oregon's economic vitality depends vitally on full funding for the community college so we can ensure that we have a vibrant and healthy workforce. In the long term, if we're to continue to provide a proficient workforce to attract industry to our area and to accommodate a living wage for our growing population, it's going to require full funding of a four-year university at Juniper Ridge. And thank you very much for listening to me, and I'll pass it on to my colleague now.
Thank you.
I'm Sunny. I live in Deschutes County. Education shouldn't just be for the rich, and the increased funding or the decrease in funding is increasing tuition that we have to pay here at COCC and other community colleges. The end result of that is that when we're done with school, we're going to turn around and go get a job that will supposedly support our family, but it won't, because we'll be paying off all these high education loans. And the purpose of going to school is to get into a job that pays more than minimum wage. So I would ask you to fully fund the community colleges, especially COCC.
Thank you.
I'm Lynn Wilson. I'm testifying from Bend, Oregon. Let me begin by thanking you for the opportunity to speak to you from the other side of the mountains. This type of forum provides the community outreach that is necessary in sound decision making, and I applaud you for recognizing that. I'd also like to thank the parents and teachers that have joined us here tonight. Don't you guys know anything? I'm a parent of two elementary school children, a member of Stanford Children, and a board member for the Ben Lapine Education Foundation. I'm also a native Oregonian that has been voting for over 20 years. Today, I'm here to ask you for a responsible school funding package for K through 12 schools. $5.4 billion would be a minimum level of service for our children. Our children have already seen class sizes grow, days cut from their school year, programs cut and reduced, and they have witnessed pay-to-participate fees become prohibitive to their peers. Anything less than $5.4 billion would continue to erode schools. Although I'd love to see the advancement of the quality education model in Oregon, I do understand that in these hard financial times that it is not a reality. I am not, however, convinced that this legislature has considered all revenue options and shied away from the tax cuts that mean robbing our kids of the level of funding that currently exists. My children and I are here to ask you, please, make education a priority, if not for the sake of the children, for the sake of Oregon's future. Attracting quality businesses by graduating leaders from our schools with the skills they need to engage and compete. My husband and I continue to live in Oregon, not just because this is where we grew up, but because Bend has a high livability factor. We want our children to grow up in a community that has so much to offer. Livability is, however, negated by the erosion of public schools. We are on a slippery slope here, and let's not let go of Oregon's future. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now we'll go to Condon.
Hi, Chair and members of the committee. I'm Darla Steele, owner of Country Flowers and Chamber of Commerce president. Condon is a small 700 or 800 people, rural, isolated retirement community that's dependent on every job. As the Chamber last year began a revitalization program in an effort to attract people and businesses here. We cannot survive any more cuts, which would result in the loss of jobs and services. It is a spiral downward that cannot be stopped. I found out after 10 years on the school board, as you cut programs, you lose jobs and people have to move away, which results in more jobs cut. We need both people and jobs here in order for our businesses to be able to survive economically as well. We are all struggling to hang on. Our rural lifestyle is worth preserving. Please maintain the budget and preserve the bare bones jobs and services that we have.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Vicki Winters, and I am the Gillam County Juvenile Director and until February of this year was the director of the Commission on Children and Families for 5 years. I'm here to address the importance of the commission system to Gillam County. The Gillam County Commission on Children and Families is known in our county as the hub of information. The office works hand in hand with the school districts, child cares, early education, faith communities, mental health, law enforcement, and other county and state agencies to meet the various needs of the families in our county. The commission assists in collaboration in finding necessary services and funding, as well as in educating providers and partners on how to obtain grants and access unknown resources. The commission office is essential in connecting families to resources in order for their survival in a county that has very few resources. Condon is located in the middle of a wheat field. It is 1.5 hours minimum one way on windy roads with either wheat trucks, combines, logging trucks, or snow plows, slowing down the travel time to all major services. Major services such as a hospital. We are a county of 1,778, 1.6 person per square mile. Our two communities, Arlington and Condon, are 38 miles apart one way. This county relies on what is available in this county. We have to be completely self-sufficient and rely on what is in this county. We live here, raise our families here, and we work here. It is imperative that there be a place for families to turn to find resources in order to survive in this frontier county, and that is the commission. It has taken time to establish the hub of the county, the commission, but it is now well established and accessed consistently. This county relies on the commission not only for funding, but also as a contact point of information to help in the success of our families in a most unique area. I respectfully urge you to support the governor's budget to continue the resources our county desperately needs through the commission. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Next, please.
Senator Schrader, Representative Scott, and members of the committee, my name is Laura Pryor, and I am the county judge in Gillam County. We believe that you are involved not just in the state budget, but you're involved in a major public policy issue. Your decisions will determine what the fabric of rural Oregon will look like. This was destined to come because of Measure 5 and the collapse of the Oregon economy. These counties that are frontier rural have no hospital, no doctor, no dentist. 40 miles between schools, which is about the same distance from Portland to Salem. I'm going to ask you to consider the collective impact of the cuts you're considering on the most fragile communities in Oregon. On education, when we stand to lose, it's not just we'll lose one program, but we have a couple of others to select from. When we lose these this year, there will be no more. There are 15 teachers in 05 in K-12. There'll be 13 in 06 and 11 in 07. We'll lose our early education program. There will not be another one. We will lose our ESD, which is a multi-county program. We stand to lose our extension program, which is a multi-county program. If we lose this Children and Families Commission money, we lose the child care facilities in this county. We will lose the juvenile program and the juvenile court. We will lose the court-appointed special advocate if these funds are cut. It's not an issue of how much you will cut. It's if you cut, we are already at cutting to bone. That happened last time. In health care, we stand to lose our rural health, which is a multi-county program. Our assisted living facility, which is the only one in 4 frontier rural counties. Our mental health program, which is multi-county. We export 7 million bushels of wheat a year to the Port of Portland. We also are the host community to all of the waste trash that comes out of Portland and the city of Seattle.
We've done that to survive. The cuts you make will fall harder on these rural areas that already have left. The cuts for Frontier Rural Oregon don't just cut bone. This time, they're terminal. So you really are involved in a public policy decision of the greatest importance for the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll go to Coos Bay now. And Ontario, you're on deck if you're there.
Hello. My name is Casper Sharpless. I'm currently a member of the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. I'm a retired high school counselor from Marshfield High School. I'm still an aspiring volunteer there, and I'm also substituting at Myrtle Point High School as a counselor right now. I'm speaking in favor of the governor's budget regarding the Oregon Opportunity Grant. Oregon Student Assistance Commission has already made a presentation of Ways and Means, so I'm not submitting anything written. I've spent the past 18 years of my professional career helping high school students prepare for college. Often the most difficult part of my job was convincing students that it was financially possible to attend. The tipping point often in convincing a student from a very needy background that they could actually afford to go was showing them that the Pell Grant plus the Oregon Opportunity Grant could indeed make it affordable. The Oregon Opportunity Grant is vitally important for needy students. The governor's budget increase, the increase in the governor's budget for the Oregon Opportunity Grant also will do something else very important. It will allow all eligible students to utilize the grant. In the past, not all eligible students have been able to obtain the grant due to insufficient funding. The Oregon Student Assistance Commission had to enforce cutoff dates for students so that if they didn't apply in time, they didn't receive the funds. Eligible students, for example, one example, eligible students were dependent on their parents for funds, or dependent on their parents. The rate of, or let me start that one over. Okay, too many goofy notes here. Eligible students who are dependent on their parents are those who have are at the 55% of the median family income, at or below. In 0506, that translates to about a family income of $32,500. Families at this income level have many challenging economic decisions to make, and often attempting to decide several months ahead of time about applying for financial aid can be overwhelming. Often, by the time they were able to make the decision, the opportunity grant wasn't available to them, and then it was financially undoable for them, so they simply didn't go. The governor's budget will allow needy families to deal with all their difficult economic decisions and still be able to utilize the Oregon Opportunity Grant, which hopefully will help them decide that they will be able to go to college. This will go a long way to helping needy students obtain a post-high school education. Thank you very much for providing this opportunity to testify from afar.
Thank you. Next, please.
Good evening. My name is Carol Benjamin with League of Women Voters of Coos County. The League is a grassroots, nonpartisan political organization. Encourages the informed and active participation of citizens in government in order to build better communities statewide. The League strongly believes that it's the obligation of the legislature to sufficiently fund state services. These services include those that provide for the protection, safety, and education of all. Although the League has positions on many state issues, we are not here today to promote specific bills. Rather, we are here to ask that you fund to the fullest extent possible the services and programs that you as legislators think are important. We ask that you not pit senior citizens against schools or parks against police, but rather that you provide for the well-being of all people in the state, of all ages, of all economic levels, of all regions. We strongly urge you to look at all funding sources, including tax credits and increasing corporate taxes. We believe there are ways to raise revenue without borrowing more and increasing the income tax. We ask for the establishment of a reserve fund and the provision of stable funding for education and social services. We know that by working together for the good of all, this legislative body has the capability and the will to draft a budget that will provide fairly for the needs of all our economies. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The Dalles, you will follow Coos Bay, please. Go ahead.
Hi. Hi, I'm Ryan Evelyn, and I'm a junior from Marshfield High School.
Hi, I'm Caitlin Johnson. I'm Becky Stoles, a freshman at Marshfield High School.
I'm Melissa Fortunat from Coke Hill. Tonight we are representing Coos County's 4-H program.
The 4-H School Enrichment Program provides nearly 3,000 students in Coos County an opportunity to receive in-school and after-school educational programs.
Oregon 4-H programs strengthen the school curriculum and provide life skill instruction in a variety of ways, such as junior leadership, camp counseling, marketing, public service, fundraising, and animal care. 4-H members have opportunities to complete national and international experiences through exchange programs and youth council participation. Coos County 4-H hosts Japanese and Korean 4-H members and older students in the International Foreign Youth Exchange Program.
4-H projects develop youth, helping them become productive and positive members of today's society. Responsibility, records, rewards, and teamwork are all a part of the 4-H program. We would like you to please consider funding the OSU extensions at the level provided in 2002 through 2003. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Go to the Dalles now, please.
Hi, my name is Trudy Townsend. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you from the Dalles today. I want to share with you a story. I'm here to support the Commission on Children and Family System, and I want to share how the commission works in Wasco County. We work to get our partners to collaborate together and build systems that are strong to support our children. Here in Wasco County, we have 120% worse child abuse rate than the state average, and that's unacceptable to me. In order to work towards eliminating child abuse in Wasco County, we've developed a home visitation network, and the Commission on Children and Families developed that system. It's where partners work together to refer clients to home visiting services. There was a mom in Wasco County who walked into the doctor's office with her newborn baby, and she said she was ready to throw that baby against the wall. That doctor got on the phone and called the Commission on Children and Families office, and that afternoon we had a home visitor in that home, and that baby is happy and healthy today, and that's a success of the children and family system. So I just ask that you support the Commission on Children and Families and continue to build that system for local communities. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, please.
Thank you.
Senator Schrader, Representative Scott, members of the committee, good evening. My name is Rick Eggers. I'm chairman of the Hood River County Commission on Children and Families. I'd like to take just a moment to talk to you about why I chose to serve this organization. I'm a recently retired educator. For the past 19 years, I've served as a school central office administrator both in Hood River and Sherman counties. As I retired, I was asked to volunteer for a number of very worthy causes and organizations. I chose to serve as a lay member of the Hood River County Commission on Children and Families because over the years I've grown to respect and admire this organization. I did this because I know that in Hood River County, the commission is adept at getting people and agencies to work together. It is a respected resource for information and assistance. It is able to identify gaps and duplications in services that individual agencies may not be able to identify because they tend to focus on their own issues. The commission is the one place where once every month representatives of local agencies get together and make our communities better places to live. The Hood River County Commission is an accountable agency. It is accountable to the Hood River County Board of Commissioners. It is not a large state agency isolated from the folks it serves. I have grown to appreciate and respect the work that this agency does, and I wanted to take the opportunity to share this with you. Thank you for your concern.
Thank you very much.
Co-Chair Schrader and Co-Chair Scott, and members of the committee. My name is Tom Schaefer. I am a full-time school and community volunteer since retiring 12 years ago. I'm also a member of the Region 9 ESD Board, the Hood River County, and the State Commissions on Children and Families. I'm here to support the funding of the Commission on Children and Families at the level of the Governor's budget and the House Co-Chair's budget. The Oregon Commission on Children and Families is a system. It works differently than traditional government. It integrates state and local. It integrates professional and lay citizens. Local commission directors said, the state is like a part of their local infrastructure, state staff, an extension of their own. The OCCF has shown itself to be a valuable method for locals and state to work together toward common goals. In Hood River County, the local commission has developed collaborations, bringing together DHS, schools, local service providers, business, and churches at the same table, leveraging from federal and private resources for over three times what we've received from the state general funds. Our prevention dollars are locally directed to target those at greatest risk before they enter the more expensive systems. Most local funding goes to Healthy Start, which is, as you know, a research-based best practice and has already shown its effectiveness in improving parenting. This is a proven way to reduce abuse. Another local impact is through juvenile crime prevention dollars, which are channeled through our local commission. Our local teen court has effectively redirected many first-time offenders and allowed our juvenile department to concentrate their efforts on the repeat offender. Our school resource worker has been instrumental in lowering Hispanic dropout rate to the lowest in the state and among the lowest in the country. Our youth groups in high school have helped keep our youth in school and have given them direction. Our Hispanic youth continuing on to college has quadrupled under this program. This is a way out of poverty. These are just examples. We need your support of the OCCF budget to keep our progress going. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll go to LeGrand now, please.
Schrader, Chair Scott, members of the committee, I thank you for this opportunity to provide input to your budgeting process. I am Ben Boswell, Wallowa County Commissioner, representing the position of Wallowa County. We accept the Governor's recommended budget with the following high-priority additions as revenue forecasts permit, and some of these are included in your co-chair's budget. We're seeking the actual cost of community corrections. We support the restoration of $4.1 million in the mental health and alcohol and drug prevention programs. We seek to maintain the DHS office in Enterprise, to restore at least $1.2 million to OSU Extension, to restore the $1.4 million to the Student Leadership Center and Frontier Learning Center, and to restore the $0.2 million to the SWCDs. Wallowa and Union counties support the governor's recommended budget by maintaining the support for the Commission on Children and Families, the Juvenile Crime Prevention Plan, the Assessment and Taxation Program, Predator Control, and the Regional Rural Strategies Restoration. Speaking of which, Wallowa County supports the efforts of our representative, Greg Smith, in proposing to reinvent the state's economic development programs, which works for all of Oregon through his Grow Oregon initiative. If more income could, income tax revenue could be generated, all necessary programs could be funded at adequate levels. I thank you for considering the interests of the people of Wallowa County and any others who may not have had a chance to speak. Thank you again.
Thank you very much.
Committee Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Lyle DeFreeze. I live in Baker County, where I'm a rancher. The ranch has enterprises of livestock and forest. I'm here tonight to let you know that I'm in favor of fully restoring the funding level previous to the year 2001 for the extension service, as well as agriculture experiment stations and the forestry research laboratory. If Oregon is to remain competitive in the production of natural resources and grow the economy, especially in the rural areas, it is essential that funding for extension, experiment stations, and laboratories be full and properly funded. The natural resource industries are still a powerful driving force in the Oregon economy. The legislature needs to invest more not less, in the research and technology that helped our rural industries to be innovative and to grow. There is a history of many years showing the money that has been spent has been well spent. These programs create innovative products, good jobs, and strong communities. For these reasons, funding the Extension Service, the Experiment Stations, and the Forestry Research Lab needs to be restored. And I want to thank you for this opportunity to convey my thoughts.
Thank you. Thank you.
Co-Chair Schrader and Scott and the members of the committee, my name is Colleen McLeod. I'm a Union County Commissioner. I want to compliment your willingness to take these meetings out into the state. It may seem a bit Yogi Berra-ish to say you learn a lot by listening, but you certainly gain more credibility with Oregonians by this gesture that proves that you are listening. I'm heading into my third term as a county commissioner, and I've watched this legislative process up close and personal. Counties, cities, and the state have a marvelous system of government, an interconnected process which does not suffer tweaking very well. With the services we provide to Oregonians so closely twined, we are constantly mending the inevitable scars of every action of the state, having a reaction in local government. Please be thoughtful of our system. I come tonight not with specifics, but with solutions for you. Would that government at all levels had adequate finances to support every program that Oregonians find necessary. Your job would certainly be less stressful. Unfortunately, we haven't, and we can't, excuse me. But here in rural Oregon, we remember. We remember when we did have the ways and the means to provide services to Oregonians. That was back before we allowed a faction of our nation and our state to shut down every source of natural wealth we possess, a faction that has succeeded in falsely branding us poor managers of our own resources. Like the tailor's children who have no clothes, we stand at the edges of our state and national forests and watch the ravages of time and fire disintegrate our opportunities. We tear holes in the breadbasket of our farmers and ranchers by forcing them to spend time away from their farms defending themselves and their way of life against regulation and now predators. Time that should be spent growing the food we eat and generating needed income for our state. You will be deciding more legislation and regulation this session. Be mindful that every regulatory action has a reaction as well, and that reaction generally shows up on the debit side of state budget. Please help us get back to productivity with natural resources and the time before funding made enemies of public safety, health, seniors, and children. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That concludes our testimony, unless there is anyone that remains at the locations that would like to address something that we have not had yet tonight. We would take that, and if you'd kind of wave your arm if there is anyone, we'll go to that area.
Stay, please.
Go ahead, please.
I'm waiting. Sure. In good faith.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for staying for the end of the parade. Senator Schrader, Representative Scott, committee members. My name is Janet Patton. I am a family physician in the thriving 5,000-person metropolis of Reedsport and the board chair of the AHEC of Southwest Oregon, which serves Coots, Curry, Douglas, Jackson, Josephine, and Lane counties. I'm here tonight to support Senate Bill 5522, restoring funding for the Oregon Health and Science University, from which AHEC is funded, and give you an idea of how that funding affects rural and coastal Oregonians. In my clinic, three out of my six partners have been trained at OHSU, and all of us did rotations in rural areas of the state that were sponsored by the AHEC through OHSU. We are still a teaching practice. We've had 91 students and 19 residents rotating through our clinic, and one of those is now my practice partner. Rural rotations are repeatedly cited as the best part of medical school training, and it increases the likelihood that they will return to Oregon and rural areas in particular. The Oregon, the Office of Rural Health is also funded through OHSU, which helped us with recruiting efforts through their HERO program and also assistance in helping us become a National Health Service Corps site and also a rural health clinic. These are all programs to help us stay open, since 58% of our patients are Medicare, Medicaid, or self-pay, and just-in patients can't keep the doors open. Our hospital feels the impact of OHSU. We are feeling the nationwide shortage of nurses, paying a lot for traveling agency nurses, and we found it was better off to train local people. So when the International Paper Mill closed in 2000, we retrained a number of those folks as nurses, and they are some of our best staff. We have a desperate need for larger nursing classes, and please ignore the funding. We need to expand. This is a 5 to 10 year problem that will only deepen in crisis. Our patients also appreciate the support of OHSU. They go to the Child Development and Rehabilitation Center, which provides feeding disorders and disability evaluation, and it's a heck of a lot easier to send people 90 miles to Eugene than 3.5 hours up to Portland. The AHECs are the pipeline stoker for providers. It takes 10 to 15 years to go from the decision to become a physician to actually getting an Oregon license. And so we're starting to plant the seeds of healthcare careers in teachers. They also identify and work with local groups, including community colleges, to solve local healthcare access problems. OHSU has a 96,000 square mile campus really works. And I would encourage you to value OHSU's impact on my corner of Oregon as much as I do. Thank you for your time.
Thank you all very, very much.
There's one more here from Ben. Ben?
Ben, go ahead.
Greetings, gentlemen. Thank you very much. Very briefly, my name is Jim Foster. I'm the campus academic officer at OSU Cascades, and I'm with my colleague, Professor Marilyn McGregor, who is program director of our Masters in Counseling. And very briefly, we want to convey to you our appreciation and acknowledge your sound investment in higher education in Central Oregon. Basically, and very briefly, we want to convey the good news that that sound investment has joined the state legislature in partnership with Governor Kulongowski to provide access to higher education to hundreds of students who would not have had it prior to OSU Cascades arriving in Central Oregon. Since our arrival, we have served a number of students. Our current head count is about 500 students. Our enrollment this spring term is up 18% over last spring term, and we provide availability of higher education to a vastly growing region. As has been pointed out earlier this evening, the Deschutes County is the fastest growing county in the state. It is the 91st fastest growing county in the United States. And prior to your investment in higher education in Central Oregon, students had to leave this region to go to the Valley or other parts of the state to complete their higher education. So basically, Merrill and I are here to provide you with congratulations and for our appreciation for your investment in access and partnering with Governor Kulongowski in serving the students of this region. Merrill?
Hi, I'm Dr. Marilyn McGregor, and Jim asked me to speak tonight as evidence of the success of what's going on here at OSU Cascades. I am director of the counseling program here. We just started the program last summer and have 25 students. We are starting our second group. We're starting our second group with 30 students this coming term, this coming year. We have provided access to people who otherwise would not have professional training available to them. And in turn, these people will provide professional counseling services to people in the community who otherwise would be underserved. Thank you for your time, and thank you for your continued wise investment in our programs here.
Thank you very much. Brand. Thank you very much.
This is Adals. This is the Dallas. Can we get through?
Yep.
Go ahead, please. The Dallas. We're taking.
Good evening, Senator Schrader, Representative Scott, and members of the Joint Committee. My name is Larry Wolf. I'm a registered voter here in the Dallas, and I'm here tonight to ask you to reconsider the $12.393 billion budget that has been agreed upon. I would encourage you to look at this because it appears that this budget does not contain enough money to adequately fund K-14 education. Also, I encourage you to consider doing away with some of the tax breaks that return a large percentage of the dollars collected back to taxpayers, especially at a time when there aren't sufficient dollars to adequately fund K-14 education, health and human services, and public safety. The governor's budget of $5.0 billion, the House proposal of $5.175 billion, and the Senate proposal of $5.325 billion are all short of the $5.4 billion budget that is needed to hold schools harmless. Remember, if we don't fund schools adequately, it's the students of this state that suffer. Thank you.
Thank you all very much. We appreciate the testimony that you gave to us on behalf of myself and fellow co-chair Senator Schrader and the other 12 senators and 12 representatives that stayed tonight and listened to all 63 folks. We appreciate very much, and thank you. Good night. Okay, committee, we are committee.
Thanks for trying.